Good morning. I'll call the House Judiciary and Civil Law Committee to order. Today is Thursday, March 6th. The first order of business, we do have a quorum. I keep forgetting to say that. The first order of business is approval of the minutes from March 4th. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes? Representative Curran.
So moved, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Curran. Any discussion on the minutes? Seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. Just a couple things before we get started here, folks. I know passions run high on this issue on both sides of the political spectrum, and so I just want us to have a really respectful discussion today. I know we will. And so with that, I will ask the presenters to come to the table for House File 1233. Representative Zalesnikar and Representative Niska are co-presenting today. And before we get to an explanation of the bill, I will move the A1 amendment. Is there any discussion on the A1 to get the bill in the order that the bill author would like? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of approval of the A1, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment is adopted. Representative Zalesnikar, welcome to the committee, and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Scott and members. House File 1233 provides an exemption for women's athletics aligning with Title IX. Minnesota courts have interpreted the Minnesota Human Rights Act to mean protections based on sexual orientation, including protections based on gender identity, but they added the words because of the words added gender identity. So girls across the state deserve a fair and level playing field with the protections designed in Title IX. Federal courts and federal law have upheld Title IX protections based on sex, male and female, not gender identity. And this bill is simply clarifying that any entity who wants a female-only team is not in violation with the Minnesota Human Rights Act, and that is House File 1233.
Thank you, Representative Zalesnikar. Representative Niska, were you wanting to speak to this as well?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House File 1233 is important legislation that should be adopted for three reasons. The first is for the, as we've discussed recently on another bill, House File 12, divisions in sports are necessary, important. Of course, everyone, I think, agrees that you need to have certain divisions and classifications to have fair and safe competition. And I think the science is pretty clear that biological sex can be a relevant factor in determining what those classifications should be. It's important that the law recognizes that it's reasonable, it's legal for sports organizations to have divisions that are based on biological sex. That's obviously important for providing opportunities for female athletes, like what Title IX is intended to protect. The second reason is that it looks like there's a looming conflict between the state law, or at least the way Minnesota has interpreted, or Minnesota officials are interpreting state law, and federal law, the way that the federal administration is interpreting federal law. We see it in the packet. There's a letter from the administration threatening loss of federal funds if we don't resolve that conflict, and House File 1233 would help us to resolve that conflict. But third, I think that there's a looming problem in Minnesota state law that's going to potentially create a problem for having any sex or gender-based divisions in Minnesota law at all. Keith Ellison's advisory opinion from the Attorney General's office, as well as the potential Supreme Court case coming up in a case involving whether powerlifting organization, an adult powerlifting organization, can have divisions based on biological sex. How that comes out, if we don't create a safe harbor, might create a situation in which any division, whether it's based on, whether it's called a sex division or whether it's called a gender identity division, is going to be in some way or another a violation of discrimination law on the basis of sex or gender identity. I think that's pretty clear from the Attorney General opinion, if you read it carefully and think about how it applies to different types of challenges that different types of people could make on being told whether or not they can participate in whatever division they choose to participate in, it's going to create a big potential problem, and we need to create a statutory safe harbor, and House File 1233 will do that. So I hope members will support it. It creates an opportunity for private organizations, the ability of private organizations to create the right categories for their private organizations, and it's important legislation. Thank you.
Thank you. I believe our first presenter or testifier is Renee Carlson.
No.
Representative Zilisnikar.
Thank you, Chair Scott. The first testifier will be Amanda.
Okay.
On Zoom.
All right. We'll go to the testifier on Zoom, who's under a tight timeline. So. Amanda, are you with us? There she is.
Can you guys hear me okay?
We sure can. Can you hear us?
Yes, thank
Perfect.
You.
Go ahead.
So I'm going to go a little off script because they kind of covered a lot that I wanted to go over. But good morning. Thank you guys for having me so much. I appreciate you taking time. This is such a critical issue in the landscape of female athletics and something I'm incredibly passionate about.
Amanda?
So thank you all for your... Yeah.
Amanda, could you please just introduce yourself and tell us, you know, what your role is or how you're coming to us today. Thank you.
Yes. So, yes, I'm Amanda Sherping. I am currently a dean of students at a high school. I've been doing that for 7 years, and I was a high school teacher prior to that. And I have also coached varying levels for over 15 years, various backgrounds, and I'm a former college athlete.
Go ahead.
So, okay, thank you. So, again, thanks for your time. Going off script, I just want to talk to my personal experience as a college athlete and then working in a high school office. In a high school office, this issue has come up many, many, many times. I have many female athletes that sit in my office and have had to personally compete against a biological male, and watching these young women, their self-confidence, their self-esteem deteriorate as time and time again they've endured such a difference as in biologically stronger, biologically athletic ability, just different with biological males on the other side of the court. I've seen my young women get severely injured because of that sheer strength and athletic ability of a biological male on the other side. And sitting in my office day to day, working with young women struggling when mental health is at an all-time high in our young people has been really discouraging. I think we need to protect our young women in sports. I think we need to protect equal opportunities for our young women. And that would probably be my biggest concern on top of the safety of our young women. I have competed at a college level long before this was an issue, but even competing in some co-ed teams against biological males, specifically in volleyball. I don't know if you guys have ever played against a 7-foot male across a net, but it's terrifying, and that's on a men's net. Now bring that net down to women's height, and you're looking at a very dangerous situation. And we've seen examples of that across the nation of young women today getting injured in situations like this. So the safety of our young women on the court, on the gym floor is vital. And on top of that, going back to specific situations in my office, I've had young women in tears of the level of discomfort of changing in a locker room with biological males, of feeling unsafe to the point where they've quit sports, they've changed schools. It's an epidemic that we cannot ignore anymore. So I have stories that I could talk about for days. If you have any questions, please reach out to me. I'd love to share more for the sake of everyone's time today. I'm going to leave it at that, but I'm seeing it every day, and our young women are the ones who are struggling the most from the current situation. I appreciate your time and consideration. If you have any questions, please let me know, but appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much, Amanda. I appreciate your testimony. Next, we'll move to Renee Carlson. Please introduce yourself for the tape and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Renee Carlson. I serve as General Counsel for True North Legal and the Minnesota Family Council. Female sports are a remarkable American success story in Minnesota and across the country. This is in large part due to the enactment of Title IX nearly 50 years ago. Title IX is historically recognized for breaking down barriers for women and girls by creating educational athletic opportunities just for them. Under this law, reasonable sex-based distinctions are not only permitted, they are required in order to carry out Title IX's distinct purpose. Minnesota followed by passing its own protections for women and girls, enacting what one Minnesota court called the counterpart to Title IX, including Minnesota rules referring to school athletic teams based on, quote, males and, quote, females in their categories. The federal government's executive order keeping men out of women's sports, and most significantly, federal courts have affirmed that Title IX prohibits discrimination on the basis of sex, not gender identity. In Tennessee versus Cardona, the case that vacated the Biden administration's interpretation of Title IX, the court explained that, quote, redefining sex to include gender identity contravenes the plain text of Title IX, which sought to level the playing field between men and women. Expanding the definition of discrimination to include gender identity would eviscerate the statute and render it largely meaningless. The Minnesota Human Rights Act embodies the same spirit and intent of Title IX in the exemptions relating to sex for both educational and private athletic teams. It even directs schools to comply with Minnesota's Title IX counterpart, conveying a common understanding of the law's intent and purpose to create a level playing field for women in athletics while prohibiting discrimination against them. As the 11th Circuit held, a policy can lawfully classify on the basis of biological sex without unlawfully discriminating on the basis of transgender status. The Minnesota Attorney General and some Minnesota courts have twisted this exemption on its head. In an advisory opinion to the Minnesota State High School League, Minnesota Attorney General Keith Ellison stated President Trump's executive order prohibiting males from participating in female sports does not have the force of law and cannot supersede Minnesota state law, which was further explained by Leader Niska. Attorney General Ellison interprets Minnesota law to require the Minnesota State High School League, and by extension, those districts which follow its policy, to require male athletes to compete on female teams. The U.S. Attorney General warned the league and Attorney General Ellison that state law does not override federal law, and perpetuating injustice against female athletes may result in lawsuits or termination of federal funding. Minnesota schools are now pitted between the loss of federal funding as a result of noncompliance with Title IX or losing opportunities for all of their student athletes. A number of school board members have already reached out to me asking for guidance, noting special concern about the requirements to certify yearly compliance with Title IX. The threat to women's and girls' progress is not limited to Minnesota educational institutions. It extends to athletic teams, youth sports organizations, and even businesses. A lawsuit is currently pending in the Minnesota Supreme Court where USA Powerlifting is being sued simply for restricting female categories to female-only athletes. Private athletic leagues are also concerned that they might be the next legal target. We are in receipt of an anonymous letter from a private athletic coach who's very concerned about this and the impact it will have on many girls playing in sports. Members, Minnesota laws that were enacted to protect women and girls in athletics are now being used against them. Athletic teams have long been separated by male and female in order to foster safety, fairness, and athletic opportunities for women and girls. At a bare minimum, this committee should ensure that no female athletic team or league will be subjected to unjustly lawsuits, penalties, investigations, or fines under Minnesota law simply for protecting women and girls' athletic opportunities consistent with federal law. House File 1233 is a step in the right direction. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Ms. Carlson. Next up is M. Watts, and on deck is Iman Hassan.
And go ahead with your testimony. Hi, everyone. My name is Emma Watts. I'm the Executive Director of the Council on LGBTQIA2S+ Minnesotans, and I use she, her pronouns. The Council strongly opposes House File 1233 and urges you to use facts, not assumptions, to inform policy decisions about trans athletes. The facts clearly show that claims of unfair athletic advantage are not supported by science and that exclusionary policies harm all women, not just trans athletes. Since 2014, the Minnesota State High School League has allowed trans athletes to compete on teams that align with their gender identity without issue. Over that same period, girls' sports participation rates in Minnesota have been the highest in the nation for over a decade. The idea that inclusive policies harm women's sports is simply isn't driven by evidence. Another myth we've heard is that trans women have an automatic athletic advantage, and this is just not supported by science. A major rigorous review by the Canadian Center for Ethics in Sport found no universal biological advantage before or after medical transition. Like all athletes, trans women have diverse body types and abilities. In fact, this study found that, on average, trans women before medically transitioning had lower lean body mass and less strength compared to cisgender men. And post-medical transition, their performance levels aligned with cisgender women. These findings show that broad assumptions about trans athletes ignore both science and the natural diversity among all people. The claim that boys would pretend to be transgender for a competitive edge is entirely unfounded. There is no evidence of this happening. Cisgender boys face strong social pressures to conform to traditional masculinity, making such a choice virtually unthinkable. More importantly, transgender people face high rates of bullying, discrimination, and violence. Transitioning is not a strategic move or a shortcut to success, but a deeply personal and often challenging journey. Finally, the idea that transgender inclusion increases injury risk is also baseless. All athletes, regardless of gender, face the possibility of injury in competitive play. Suggesting girls are at a greater risk against trans athletes is misleading and dismisses the physical nature of sports where injuries occur at all levels. Singling out trans athletes as a unique risk is fear-based, not evidence-based. The materials we submitted have additional research in it, but I'll leave you with this. Policy should be driven by facts, not fear. And the fact is, inclusion has never been the real threat to women's sports. Discrimination has. Thank you.
Next up is Iman Hassan, and then after that, Kat Rowan. And if you could go ahead and come up so we can move things along, that would be great. Thanks, Kat. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Chairwoman Scott and members of the Judiciary Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today in opposition to HF 1233. My name is Iman Hassan, and I'm the Advocacy Director at Gender Justice, and I'm also a former Legal Director at Massachusetts Advocates for Children and former Staff Attorney at Southern Minnesota Regional Legal Services, where I focused on advocating on behalf of children facing barriers to their education due to discrimination. The Minnesota Human Rights Act provides a comprehensive anti-discrimination framework which must protect all Minnesotans from the harmful impact of discrimination. It's one of the strongest civil rights laws in the nation. The MHRA declares that the full utilization benefits from any educational institutions without discrimination is a civil right. As Minnesotans, we recognize that discrimination based on a person's membership in a protected class threatens the rights and privileges, and I quote, menaces the institutions and frameworks of democracy. It menaces our democracy. It menaces our human dignity. We all know that schools play a pivotal role in a young person's development and intellectual, mental, and emotional health. Targeting and excluding transgender, non-binary, intersex, and intersex students from participation in school programming, including athletic programs, alongside their peers, is harmful to all students and undermines the learning environment for everyone. This is why Minnesota courts and NHV or NOCA have already ruled that the MHRA protects trans students from discrimination in schools. We ask all members of this committee to strongly oppose HF 1233 and to reject attacks against transgender, non-binary, and intersex youth. As adults, we shall not abdicate our responsibility to create safe learning spaces for all students free from discrimination. classrooms that allow students to learn, grow, and thrive and develop into well-adjusted humans can't exist when we open the door to the menacing of discrimination. HF 1233 creates a dangerous and illegal carve-out, undermines the intent of the act, and creates costly legal liabilities due to future litigation, and we will sue. As we sit here, agencies across the federal government are dismantling offices that enforce civil rights and anti-discrimination laws. As we face a federal civil rights crisis, and the new administration threatens to annihilate 60 years of advancements in equal opportunity, we must lean on the 70-year history of the MHRA and protect our children, our Minnesota children, from these assaults on education and civil rights. The great state of Minnesota was the first in the nation to prohibit gender identity discrimination. Let's honor this legacy and continue to build a more equitable and inclusive Minnesota. I know at least one of the authors of this bill has lived through a Minnesota where white mothers were allowed to say, due to false biology and science, that black children were dangerous in sports and in schools. I'm thankful that I didn't live during that time, but I'm an advocate for all children to never live in a world or in a Minnesota that imagines that they are dangerous to other little girls. Vote no on HF 1233, vote no on discrimination, and vote no on creating a window to a space that is unsafe for children to be themselves. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Kat Rowan is our next testifier, and then Jeff Powers is on. Oh, that's Zoom. I guess the rest of the testifiers are on Zoom. Go ahead and present your testimony after you introduce yourself, please. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair Scott. Good morning. My name is Kat Rohn. I serve as Executive Director of Outfront Minnesota, our state's largest LGBTQ plus advocacy organization. We come here today to oppose HF 1233, which seeks to carve out an exemption in the Minnesota Human Rights Act to allow for what would otherwise be discriminatory prohibitions on the full participation of trans athletes. We heard in committee that HF 12, a previously proposed bill on athletics participation, did not implicate questions around the Minnesota Human Rights Act. And yet today, this bill would seem to recognize that there are clear questions around how these bans might infringe on the rights of Minnesotans. As an organization, we believe in the full participation of all athletes. But rather than rehashing what has already been shared in many spaces around the benefit of inclusive policies, I will instead focus on what we believe is a more direct concern of this committee, the weakening of our state's civil rights protections. We as a state should always be wary when we are asked to make carve-outs in the robust protections of the Minnesota Human Rights Act, a law that all Minnesotans rely on to ensure equal protections across all areas of public life. Exemptions to civil rights protections must be rare, carefully tailored, and represent clear and compelling state interests to move forward. In our view, this bill's concerns do not warrant it, and, in fact, may further erode protections for the exact populations it intends to protect, cisgender women and girls, who are likely to be the subject of greater sex stereotyping and scrutiny over their bodies should this bill and those around it become law. Regardless of your views on the participation of trans athletes, we urge you to take a skeptical view on any effort to erode established protections in Minnesota law. We ask you to oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. We will move next to a couple of testifiers joining us today via Zoom. The first one is Jeff Powers. Are you with us, Jeff? Mr. Powers, are you with us?
Yes, good morning. Can you hear me?
I can. Please introduce yourself for the tape and go ahead with your testimony.
Certainly. I appreciate the opportunity to share with you this morning. I'm Jeff Powers. I'm a retired public educator. My career included 34 years as a teacher a coach. I coach football, basketball, track, and gymnastics, a principal, and the last 15 years a superintendent. My, when you come this late in the process, it was good to hear what has been said so I could figure out what hasn't been said. And what I want to share with you is, and it's couched in this statement, throughout my entire career, I'm proud to say that every student that came through the school that I worked in or eventually ran was treated as respectfully as possible. And we did have a diverse range of students and many of the issues that you've already discussed. It provided challenges, but I think we can all agree that it's important that we care for all these kids. And I am proud to say that I believe I was able to take part in that. Moving forward, I'm going to read the original intent of Title IX. This was a senator, I think its name was Bale, was to combat the continuation of corrosive and unjustified discrimination against women in the American educational system. It's saddened me to see Title IX used as a tool to take away the opportunities that women have. And when we allow boys to participate in girls' sports, that is what happens. There's obviously diverse opinions on the impact of that. I definitely fall on the side of the fact that there are biological inequities that are extremely unfair. I'm the father of a daughter. She is out of school now. I am actually very pleased that she is not having to participate against biological males in her sporting events. My viewpoint is a very practical one. I had transgender children in districts that I worked in. I worked closely with their parents to make sure that their situation was as good as it was possible to be. And I'm, again, proud to say that our relationships were positive and they were happy with the school district. It also is hard to see an act that was, I believe, instituted in 1972 and successfully promoted females in sport for many, many years, misused as it has been. And I certainly hope that's rectified as it has been at the federal level in the state of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Mr. Powers. Appreciate your testimony. Our next testifier via Zoom is Jill Simmons, MD. Are you with us, Jill?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead with your testimony, Doctor. Introduce yourself and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Dr. Jill Simons. I am a board-certified pediatrician, and I have been in medical practice in Minnesota for over 20 years. I have significant training in sports medicine as it relates to pediatrics, and I'm currently the executive director for the American College of Pediatricians. Today, I'm speaking to you to provide testimony in support of a bill that allows for women's only sports to exist. If we are going to have designated categories for sports, we need to be able to define those categories for eligibility, just as you can define age categories or geographic eligibility requirements. For female or male only sports, it is necessary to define what is male and female. Male and female refers to sex, which is a classification amongst all organisms based on their reproductive strategies. Gender is a manufactured social construct which cannot be measured, tested for, or objectively determined and should not be used to define eligibility for single-sex sports. Males have a reproductive system that is designed towards producing small gametes, sperm, and females have a reproductive system that is designed towards producing relatively large gametes or ova. Disorders of sexual development, called DSDs, or sometimes commonly referred to as intersex, are rare and are not exceptions to this sexual binary. They do not result in a third sex. These persons are still either male or female sex. These are cases where normal development is disrupted. The same way that a developing fetus may have a chromosomal or in-uterine influence or event, that causes them not to develop an arm, that baby is still a human, even though they have a developmental anomaly. What has been stated about there being no physical advantages over men and women is simply false. Being male or female matters because from birth, even before puberty, on average, males have physical advantages over females. It's why pediatricians like me use sex-specific growth charts from the CDC. The American Pediatrics website states, around age 13, most boys are taller, heavier, faster, stronger, bigger, and more powerful than most girls. These discrepancies may place girls at a great risk for injury and or unfair advantage in sports, end quote. The physical and physiological advantages of males are indisputable, and no amount of testosterone suppression or hormone manipulation can ever equalize that advantage that develops in utero and persists throughout the lifespan. Safety and fairness are critical in sports, and therefore we must allow for there to be single-sex sports. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I believe that concludes all of our testifiers. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we will move to member questions. Representative Curran. I did it myself.
We'll get there. Thank you, Chair. First, to all of our two-spirit, non-binary, and trans folks paying attention to the conversation, you are seen, you're valued, and you're respected. Second, no person, Minnesotan or anywhere else, should be judged based solely on their ability to reproduce or any principles of fertility. There's a lot to address here. I'll do my best, and I know team members want to jump in here too, but one of the comments made is that we have an epidemic upon us, and I would agree, but I disagree on what that epidemic actually is. We have a political epidemic that is unfortunately targeting a vulnerable and very small group of people. There is not this large wave of people who don't fit into one or the other bucket trying to force themselves into spaces that they don't belong. People are simply trying to be seen and be valued and respected and find a sense of belonging somewhere. And what this bill does very explicitly, along with, again, other bills that we have seen and already debated, very explicitly carves out not a section of human rights. On the paper, that's what it does. This carves out a group of people from public life, saying that if you don't fit this description, there's not a place for you. We're going to say that there's this place and this place, and if you don't fall into these categories, that's not my problem. I have a huge problem with that. Trans people are not a problem to be fixed. Minnesota is not a place where our state tells you who you are or what you are. Minnesota is a state that allows you to be who you are. And you as an individual tell us who you are. You as an individual tell us as legislators how we can support you. Bills like this are not coming from my constituents. Bills like this aren't coming to the floor for constituents. In fact, we've heard bills like this are pushed to the floor to see how Democrats might vote on it. I'm not here. I didn't fight hard to be elected to see how a certain party would vote on an idea. I came here to protect the people of Minnesota and my constituents, not to bring ideas that are not going to pass, and further, if they were to pass, eliminate people from existence. I hear a lot of arguments that that's not the intention. Prove it, because that's what these bills do. I also, Representative Niska, you said this bill helps resolve conflict. This entire conflict that we're talking about was brought upon Minnesotans and our nation by politicians. Neighbors don't care what their neighbor looks like, if they're trans or not, what church they go to. They care if you're a good human being, and if you're somebody they can trust to watch their dog or keep an extra house key for in case they're not home and something happens when they're on vacation. That's the neighborhood I'm from. Nobody cares what you look like, how you identify. They just want to make sure that you're healthy, that your kids get a good education, and that your kids can play with each other and develop good, solid relationships. That's the Minnesota that we are. And this conflict that we're attempting to resolve is completely manufactured by politicians. And I understand that when we get an election certificate, we automatically become a politician by default. I didn't go to school for this. I don't have a political science degree and brand myself as not a politician. I never cared about politics until I saw that there were problems in my community where people were being left out and explicitly denied the ability to have human rights representation in their very own community. That's why I ran for office. Not to say that one party votes a certain way or another. This conversation is a disappointment for Minnesota and for the nation. This is not a real problem. We have several real problems on the table that we could be addressing. This isn't doing us well to get to those issues, because in a couple weeks here, we're going to be forced to work together. And it's really going to be hard to work with some folks because of bills like this. My question for the bill author is, which teams should non-binary, two-spirit, or intersex people be allowed to participate on?
Representative Zeliznikar.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative. This bill is clearly talking about protecting Title IX, which was set up to ensure that discrimination did not happen for females in female sports only. That's what this bill is doing.
Representative Curran.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative Zeliznikar, I don't know if it's intentional, but the question I asked was sidestepped. They're the very people that we're discussing here who are trying to participate in female sports. Many are non-binary, trans, two-spirit, or intersex, and have to then, under bills like this, choose a team to participate on. Which team, then, would folks who don't fall into one of these two buckets, Representative Zeliznikar, which team should they play on?
Representative Zeliznikar.
Thank you, Chair Scott, and thank you, Representative. The team would be their biological sex.
Representative Curran.
So non-binary, intersex, and two-spirit people who scientifically don't fall into one of the two buckets that you're proposing, again, I ask, kids or adults, what teams are we allowing people to play on? Third chance.
Representative Zeliznikar.
Thank you, Chair Scott, and thank you, Representative. The answer stays the same. Their biological sex.
Representative Curran.
Thank you, Chair. I have more. So I also heard, similar to other committees, we're not getting answers, and I'll just vocalize that for folks listening. There is consistency here. And, you know, we had a comment that we are seeing self-esteem deteriorate. A couple of comments on that. One, let's not encourage deterioration of self-esteem by insisting that all women or people who identify as women or female are inherently weaker than all men. Can we please stop that? That in itself is deteriorating the self-esteem of girls and women everywhere. That on itself, if feminism is saying that men are stronger than women, that is not the feminism I want to be a part of, and that is not the feminism that I see in this bill. And if we're talking about self-esteem deteriorating, the self-esteem of trans, non-binary, two-spirit people across this country is broken, yet we show up every single day, we still show up. You have broken many of us, and we still show up, and we try to hold our heads high. If you would like to help resolve conflict, I invite all Minnesotans, regardless of political party, to join in the movement to respect freedom, liberation, humanity, and dignity for every single person. That is not what this bill does. You know that. We've already had this discussion on the floor. We had overwhelming community support greet us at the House chambers saying thank you. Thank you for standing up. We know this bill is a waste of time and it's not going to pass. This bill is a waste of time also and it's not going to pass. But what it does do is challenge some of us, myself included, that when we feel broken, we will not hide. We will not be silenced. We will show up, we will continue to run for office, and we will continue to use the microphones that we have in front of us. Thank you.
Thanks, Representative Curran. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. to the bill author, I do want to say I do appreciate the fact that you all have mentioned Title IX quite a bit, because it gives me a little bit of hope that my colleagues in the Republican Party don't all believe that DEI initiatives are terrible and that they don't help and that they don't provide opportunities for people to be included and seen and provide equity. So thank you for doing that. I do appreciate you laying into it that way. One of the questions I have, and I have a couple, can you tell me the number of students that have missed opportunities because of transgender LGBTQ students that have participated in athletics?
Representative Zeliznikar or one of the testifiers?
Thank you, Chair Scott. I think I'll let Representative Niska.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't have exact numbers on the. There are a number of individuals who have been biological women participating in women's sports who have been beaten and, you know, lose positions to athletes who are biological men and have an advantage over them because of their biological sex. I think that, you know, it's pretty clear that, just look at the times of elite athletes, male athletes and female athletes. There is a difference between elite performance across biological sex. And there are, I don't have the exact numbers for you on, I know that I've seen studies or counts of the numbers, but I don't have those with me. Maybe one of the testifiers does.
Representative Zeliznikar.
Thank you, Chair Scott and members. I'll defer to Renee Carlson too.
Ms. Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Frazier, it's my understanding that there are, since this bill applies to organizations outside of athletic opportunities, that this is a concern for some private organizations, and so I don't have a data number for you. I could look into that a little bit more, but we have been contacted by school boards, but also private athletic associations that are concerned. They're concerned about their safety and speaking out loud, so they've asked us to communicate anonymously that there are verifiable incidents where club teams specifically are very concerned about this. And generally, across the country, we know that women have been harmed in athletics. Particularly, we know Peyton McNabb was concussed in a volleyball game when she suffered an injury by a male opponent on another team. So there are many girls who've contacted my office who are concerned that representatives and other legislators will wait for a girl to get harmed instead of fixing the problem. Thank you.
Representative Frazier.
I think, I haven't seen no studies that show that there's been an exclusion of participation in athletics when it comes to this issue that you all are pretending to address here. What I will say, I mean, I'm hearing the conversation around harm, and so is it what we're really trying to legislate is that in some of these sports, in some cases, or particularly, there will be contact in these sports. There is a high level of concussions in soccer. Because of the some of the hitters that are done. Are we trying to legislate out harm? Is that what we're trying to do here? Because this isn't the bill to do that, if that's what we're trying to do. If we're trying to protect our kids because we believe that they can be harmed by playing against athletes that may be more elite than them, and that's not based on your biology or your chromosomes. That's based on training, access to resources to prepare you. Former athlete here. All of my kids have been athletes, very well aware how it works. Are we trying to legislate out physical harm? Because if we're trying to do that, this isn't the bill to do that.
Representative Niska.
Thank you for that question, Representative Frazier. 2 points. Number one, when you're talking about legislating, what this is doing is leaving it in the hands of private sports organizations based on different sports, right? So powerlifting, whether you're talking about different kinds of contact sports, it's allowing sports organizations to think about what are the categories that make sense in that particular, just like they'll have categories based on age, based on residency, based on things like that. We don't say that those things are, you know, reasons why someone is being excluded from full participation in sports. It's a way that different organizations try to protect fairness and safety in their sports organization. I did find the number that I was that I had in mind. It was from a United Nations report that had counted up over 600 female athletes in more than 400 competitions who had lost more than 890 medals in 29 different sports when you're talking about those who are biologically male competing in women's sports events. So that was the number that I was that I had in mind earlier.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Niska. So my question was around participation exclusion and whether we are seeing athletes being excluded from the opportunity to participate. That's what Title IX is about. Title IX is about allowing for inclusion, equity for these sports. Title IX is the reason that we have the great soccer teams that we have competing are at the level that they're competing at now. So that doesn't quite get to the question that I asked, but I appreciate you providing that data. And I'll end with this. One more question. I'll end with a comment. One more question. My question is: so, you know, we had a dean of students testify, and I believe this individual works at a public school. That individual said that one of the things they were concerned about were mental health, right? Well, we know, we have data to show that trans students, LGBTQ students, not only are they least likely to participate in athletics, but they are disproportionately impacted with higher levels of anxiety and mental health issues. And so my question is, if we're bringing legislation that will allow them to be further excluded, explicitly excluded, how are we dealing with the impacts that it will have on those students? Where is the legislation or funding that would deal with that? How are we protecting those students? Because all I'm seeing is something that will provide more harm, and we're not talking about how we protect all of our students. So how are we going to do that?
Representative Zeliznikar.
Thank you, Chair Scott and Representative. Again, this bill is making sure that we are going to preserve what Title IX intended for Title IX to do, to protect females in female sports. We don't want one injury to one of our female athletes. One concussion from one traumatic brain injury, whatever the situation is that could happen, from playing against somebody that is not a biological female. We heard testimony from the physician today that basic biology is going to tell you your bones are stronger. My bones are not going to have the same strength, and all due respect, Representative Frazier, is yours. That is just the fact. My lung capacity won't be the same either. And those things have been acknowledged for decades. And this bill is simply to provide the opportunity for girls to compete in a fair manner and to have their safety protected.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Zeliznikar, I do understand that very point that you keep making around the harm. And I appreciate you with saying that you're not the same as I am. And I will say, I, former athlete, still train like I'm an athlete. Part of that is I still train, right? I still can participate in a way, not at the same level that I did years ago, but I still can participate in a way because I still train and prepare my body for certain type of activities. But what I will say, we keep going back to this harm thing, and if we're trying to legislate out harm, this is not the way to do it. We keep referencing Title IX. Title IX is an inclusion and an equity law. And I'm glad you keep referencing that because that tells me that you know it is important and it is working. But it sounds like you're trying to legislate out harm in a sport. And I know it's a big topic because the NFL is very popular and they're trying to figure out ways to always make the game safer. But this is not the way to do what you're trying to do here. And I'm really hoping we can get to the crux of what you want to do is legislate out harm, because you keep mentioning harm every time we ask the question. So I just want to make that point. And then lastly, I want to make this point. So from some of my constituents have asked me about this legislation. And I will say, you know, I clearly come from a background. I have relatives that grew up in the 40s, 50s, 60s at a time where they weren't allowed to participate in athletics. Some of the same comments were made. They're too strong, they're too fast, it's an unfair competitive advantage. The question I have, when you bring legislation like this that will explicitly allow for exclusions in law, will explicitly allow for legal discrimination and exclusion, where does it stop? Are we going to turn the clock back to exclude other groups as well? Where do we stop? And I mean, that's my question. Where does it stop?
Representative Niska.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Frazier. 100% agree with your last point about that we should not be having racial divisions in sports, and that we have a sad history on that. My question, and I agree with a lot of your other points, my question for you is, where does the reasoning stop when it comes to biological sex or gender? Should there be women's sports? If we're saying that there should be no divisions based on either biological sex or gender identity, then you're never going to have women's sports at all. And the reality is that having women's sports, I think everyone here, I hope everyone here agrees, is a good thing. And I think if you really think seriously about the Attorney General's advisory opinion and how that's going to play out over the long term, it's going to result in an inability to have any sort of women's sports at all, any sort of girls' sports at all. And of course, it's true that not every biological male is a superior athlete to every biological female. That is 100% true, just in the same way that every 15-year-old is not a better athlete than every 12-year-old or every 18-year-old. But we still have divisions based on age. We think that's a good thing to allow for everyone to be able to participate in sports. I think the point is biological sex. It truly is is an important factor when it comes to having fair and safe divisions. This bill obviously does not solve all of the problems. Like you raised a lot of problems that still are going to exist in the world that we still have to continue our work and at the legislature to address. And I agree with a lot of the sentiment that I've heard from that side of the aisle. But the fact remains that biological sex does matter. It is a real thing. It is a real thing as it relates to athletic performance. And in order to have women's sports, in order to have girls' sports be a fair and competitive thing, you need to have some way for different athletic organizations to decide where those divisions are going to exist. And again, this isn't prescribing that for any athletic organization, it's simply allowing athletic organizations to look at that as a relevant factor. Under current Minnesota law, it looks like they're not going to be able to, and that it does create a serious problem for women's and girls' sports existing in the future.
Representative Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a sporty daughter. She played soccer, basketball. She currently does gymnastics. And I have never encountered this issue. There have never been any transgender kids on any of her teams. It's never come up in her school. So this has not been an issue that I've ever identified. And I was looking up some statistics online, and it looks like about 3% of students are transgender. And of these, 12 to 14% or so participate in athletics. So when we look at who this is going to impact, I think it's going to impact a very small number of people, girls born biological girls, but it's going to impact all transgender students, and I think we should take that really seriously. And I wanted to also just bring in sort of the medical consensus. We heard from someone with the American College of Pediatricians. That organization is an ideological group. Physicians are allowed to have an ideological opinion, but I thought it would be good to bring in the American Academy of Pediatrics.
The American Academy of Pediatrics is the largest professional association of pediatricians in the United States. And, you know, when they were looking at bills like this, they said that they were dangerous. They looked at, here, I'm just going to read a couple of excerpts. We are in the middle of a pandemic that has led to, this was during the pandemic, staggering rises in mental health concerns among children and teens. Transgender children had statistically higher rates of depression and suicidal ideation before the pandemic. Around half of transgender youth consider suicide and a third attempt it. They said that they recommend that playing on sports teams helps youth develop self-esteem, correlates positively with overall mental health, and appears to have a protective effect against suicide. And I know, like, my kids are both sporty, and sports are amazing in a child's life. They said that the bills like this ignore their recommendations and they undermine them. Instead, legislation like this would allow policymakers rather than pediatricians to determine the best care for their patients. And they said forcing transgender children to play on teams according to their sex assigned at birth rather than the gender they live in also puts their physical and mental health at risk. So that's what the general consensus amongst the pediatrician community is. And I'd just like to emphasize, like, this does not appear to be a pervasive issue affecting biological girls, but it is going to impact 100% of trans youth, and we need to support them too. Thanks.
All right, Representative Finke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Many thoughts on this. Most of them you heard on the floor on Monday, 3 days ago, when we had a very emotional and difficult debate about this exact same issue. And I'm really sad that we're having it again. I know that is an important issue in the Republican national movement. Donald Trump has issued 6 executive orders taking away the rights of trans people. We have about 7 bills introduced in the Minnesota House taking away the rights of transgender people. On Monday, we voted down this bill. On Monday, the U.S. Senate voted down this bill. This is a bad idea, but it doesn't matter. I'm in a very, like, plain-spoken mood right now. It doesn't matter that we know how this goes. We play the dance. You guys try to hurt trans people, and we try to stick up for trans people. You sit there and you call trans girls boys. You call trans women men. You specifically disregard the feelings of trans people intentionally. You accuse us of doing the same. It's a dance. We get it. I know that there's lots of polling in the world, but one of the pieces of polling that I would like to point to is that vast majorities of Republicans and Democrats believe there is too much legislation being introduced about trans people. This isn't going to help you. This is political, and it isn't going to help you. This is being driven by the leadership of the Republican national and state policies, political movements, and people don't want us to do this. They may agree with you a little bit on the issue. I don't know. 78% of Americans in 1964 believed that they would move if a black family moved into their neighborhood. That was wrong, right? I mean, maybe the polling is bad for my team right now, but it's wrong. And the longer we do this, the longer we're going to have to do this. Doesn't it seem worth not doing anymore? You've made your point. You don't think there are trans people. The only way to understand what you are doing is that there are no trans people. Otherwise, you would say trans girls once in a while. You can say, we don't think trans girls should play, but you won't say that. You will say cockamamie language to erase our actualities instead of calling trans girls girls. The law in Minnesota says trans women are women and trans girls are girls. And, you know, the Supreme Court had a ruling written by Neil Gorsuch that said trans women are protected by employment protections based on sex. And we're going to get there for the rest of the sex-based coverage as well. We're going to. This is a civil rights movement. It's early. Your side is on the wrong side. That's what I believe. You believe the opposite. But we don't have to do it all the time. Like, it really does make it horrible to be here. Representative Curran is right. It's horrible to be here. Because we're doing this twice in the same week. Are we going to put this on the floor and have to do it again and then have another showing of everybody call everybody out and get everybody mad? Like, polarization is a problem, and this is why. So I know this is a little speech. I actually didn't want to make a speech, and I know everyone always says that and no one ever believes them. But I really don't. I'm really, 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 really sad about this. So the last thing I want to say once and for all is that we need to stop soaking our culture in a pot of misogyny that says women are worse than men. Take trans people out of this completely. Trans women can play with the boys. Girls can play with the boys. And if you continue to tell girls they can't, they won't. So in 1971, there was a tennis player in high school from St. Cloud. This is before Title IX. She wanted to play tennis, and there was no girls' team. So she sued the school district. The ACLU of Minnesota carried this case. I had an opportunity to interview this wonderful athlete. And she wanted to play on the team, and the boys wouldn't let her. And she had to go to court. And she said, I'm a senior. I really want to play. Give me a chance to play. And the judge said, you have to let her play. So finally, they let her play. And guess why they didn't want her to play? Because she beat all the boys. The idea that women can't do what men do, it's wrong. We heard the story twice this week about a girl who got hurt and recovered, and is back in the pool. And that girl's story is one of amazing triumph for girls' sports. It has nothing to do with trans people. Nothing. Why are we using that girl's story to create fear? Just celebrate her. Celebrate her achievement. Why is that hard? That's a good story in support of girls' sports, not a weapon to be used against 24 trans kids. Jesus. Excuse me. I apologize. That wasn't intended. I mean, no disrespect. I'm a fan of his. I'll leave with this. I don't know where all these trans kids are coming from that are playing against the students in the Dassel-Cokato public school system. But there's only a couple. There's only a few of us out there. The only one trans kid I know who plays on a team is ranked 75th out of 100 in the sport that they play on. So thank goodness you're going to kick her off the team.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I have a question for the bill author. I'm curious to know, Representative Zalesnikar, how do you plan to enforce this?
Representative Zalesnikar.
Thank you, Chair Scott, and thank you, Representative. I think the enforcement has been in place to date. We've had birth certificates. We've had high school physicals. We've had age groups in sports. There have been mechanisms to assure fairness and safety, and I suspect the same would continue.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I know this argument has been hashed out with the other bill that we heard Monday, but this applies beyond high schools. And it applies to a lot of community groups like YMCA and those sorts of organizations as well. Birth certificates can be changed by transgender people. And so what you are asking for with this bill is some sort of trans investigation by somebody who would challenge the gender identity of a person playing sports. I know that I have coached youth sports before. My dad has helped me coach. He coached me. He coached my kids too. And I'm very uncomfortable with leaving this just up to whoever to make a decision about somebody's biological sex. So I think the same problems you had in the other bill with enforcement create the same problems in this bill. I'll also just say that cisgender girls can get hurt by other cisgender girls playing sports. Transgender girls can get hurt by cisgender girls in sports. Many people get injured playing sports, and I watch a lot of women's basketball. I am a big Caitlin Clark fan, and I see a lot of female basketball players injured by other female basketball players. And like my colleagues have said, this idea that women are so fragile and they're at risk of getting hurt and need this protection is just frankly really offensive to me as well. So I will just leave it at that. I am vehemently opposed to this bill. Thank you.
Representative Rarick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I had asked to speak to something, but Representative Niska had kind of covered it. But I would just say that the statistics that Representative Niska, Leader Niska, was talking about is all the way back from March 30th of 2024. And I'm sure there have been many, many, many more disenfranchised women and girls in sports since then. In that study that you looked at, it was 600 women and girls, and they lost 890 medals in 29 different sports. And I would also say that that study only compilated about 100 different submissions. So this is way underreported, way underreported. I would also say in that same study, it talked about the strength of a punch, Representative Niska, and it talked about, and I can cite exactly where that study came from, but they had non-elite, so kind of, so non-elite athletes, men and women, and they took a whole, I don't know if it was 100 or so, but I'll have to look at the actual, look at the study closer, but they took many athletes, non-elite athletes, and they did the punching strength, and they averaged the men and they averaged the women. It was 162% stronger punch that the men were able to do. That was in the same study that you cited. There is a biological difference between men and women. To say differently is denying science, honestly. So I wanted to add some of that because Representative Niska started it, and I just wanted to say that, this is a small sampling in this study. 100 submissions is all it is, and it ended in March 30th of 2024, so there are vastly more than just 890 medals lost for 600 women and girls across 29 different sports. I would also say that I also was a coach, and when we had a question about age, if someone was a really, really big kid and we're like, well, that kid can't possibly be in this age category, then the original birth certificate was asked for, not the changed birth certificate, but the original birth certificate that said the date they were born and which sex they were. And that is a very simple solution to this, is to just ask for that original birth certificate, and it will show all of that. And if for some reason there was a parent that said, I'm not going to put down the gender, I'm not going to put male or female, I'm just going to let the child decide, which is probably very, very rare in Minnesota. As was pointed out by Representative Feist, the entire population is about 3% that are self-identified as trans. So that situation is incredibly rare. But if there isn't any indication on the original birth certificate, you could then do a buccal swab, a non-invasive medical procedure, a buccal swab to find out what their chromosomes were, if that's really where you need to go. But that, again, maybe one in a million in Minnesota. We have 5 million people in Minnesota. It's a very, very small number. But anyway, I just wanted to add that to the conversation, Madam Chair, and some more context. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hudson.
Your mic on.
Thanks. Go ahead.
That's better.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Lesdekar. I want to start off by just acknowledging the fact that even by me flipping that switch on so that people can actually hear me, to speak to this particular issue is triggering for some folks simply because my views on both on this underlying issue have been very clearly articulated in the past. I want to try to push us past all of that. I want to try to kind of detangle the issues that are apparent but not being communicated clearly that impact women's athletics. It's very curious to me that we've heard multiple times, and I did not expect this when I woke up this morning, we've heard multiple times today that the idea that women generally can't do what men do generally, specifically in this area of women's athletics, is wrong. That's a wrong idea, which seems to be a direct refutation of the intent and purpose of Title IX. That's bizarre to me. Like, we shouldn't have sex divisions in sports. That's the implication of that statement, that sentiment, that women's athletics categorically shouldn't exist. I find that very, very bizarre. And I think at issue here is that we're failing. Representative Finke made the point about calling trans girls boys and that that is somehow dehumanizing. Thank you, Madam Chair. The problem here is that we are using the same terms across two different categories. Men, women, boys, girls. We all use those words, but we're not all talking about the same thing. And we all know it. It is embedded in the language that you use. Terms like cisgender, trans girls, trans boys, gender affirming, cisnormative. All of these terms acknowledge a distinction. We all understand that we clearly agree that there are at least two categories that we're talking about that have meaningful distinctions. If that wasn't true, we wouldn't need any of these terms, right? So what is it that we're talking about? What are these distinct categories? Well, let's start with the fact that sex has been a protected class in the Minnesota Human Rights Act since 1967. The purpose of protecting biological sex from discrimination was to ensure that members of the female sex could access the same rights and privileges as members of the male sex. That's why we did it. In 1967, the concept that we talk about today as gender identity was less than a decade old. It had not been broadly accepted. There's a doctor from Johns Hopkins University. His name was John Money. He was a psychologist there, and he first coined this term, gender identity. That was in 1955. So it's no surprise then that that concept was unacknowledged in the Minnesota Human Rights Act when it was first enacted in 1967. So for over 50 years, the law remained silent on this new concept of gender identity. It wasn't until last year in 2024 that we decided to include this new category in our anti-discrimination provisions. This is significant. And by the way, it's not my claim that gender identity is a distinct category from biological sex. This is something that the originators and even modern propagators of this idea continue to make that distinction. John Money said that the term gender role is used to signify all those things that a person says or does to disclose themselves as having the status of a boy or a man, a girl or a woman. Similarly, Judith Butler, who was a leading figure in gender theory, expanded on his distinction in a book she wrote called Gender Trouble. She wrote, quote, "There is no gender identity behind the expressions of gender. That identity is performatively constituted by the very expressions that are said to be its results." It's a performance. That's the distinction. So when we use these terms in these two different categories, we are talking about two very distinct things. The distinction between the male sex and the female sex is a biological physical reality that has real-world physical implications. The idea that in order to affirm somebody's performance, we have to allow a member of the male sex to check a member of the female sex on a basketball court, watch her collapse, watch the basketball fall back down on her, hit her, and then watch her cry on the court for the next 10 minutes, that's what we have to do in order to affirm this novel concept of gender identity, that is not an acceptable status quo. It was said earlier that this conflict, which I appreciate the fact that you're even acknowledging there is a conflict, this conflict was created by politicians, damn straight, last year, 2024, when you put into the Minnesota Human Rights Act a category that directly conflicts with a pre-existing category. It is impossible to protect both of these things. You cannot protect the distinction between the male sex and the female sex while also protecting somebody's identity and expression to the contrary of that existing category. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I've made my point.
Representative Mahmoud.
Thank you, Chair. I see that we have Commissioner from the Human Rights, Lucero, here. I'd love to call her up and learn where she lands on this bill and her thoughts and things that we should know about.
Commissioner Lucero, please take the podium. We were kind of surprised you didn't sign up, but we're glad you're here. Commissioner Lucero, welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself and go ahead and weigh in if you'd like.
Good morning, Chair Scott. I want to just start by apologizing. I think there was a misunderstanding. I also believed that I was going to be signed up, so I appreciate this opportunity to comment right now. So let me go ahead and start by laying out some groundwork for some of my comments. So just an overall feedback is kind of what you're looking for here. Okay, great. So let me just start by providing some feedback here. So the Minnesota Human Rights Act exists to prohibit discrimination across the board. As you know, in workplaces, at schools, in coffee shops, on public buses, in swimming pools, and soccer fields alike. So I know that legislators care deeply about making sure kids can thrive. That is a shared value that everyone here has. And I know that there is a desire here to make sure that Minnesota girls can play sports. I so deeply support the goal of getting more girls into sports. Some of you might know this, but I coach soccer, mostly in the fall, to 5 to 7-year-olds. I'm always so proud to see those kids develop. Some of them spend a lot of time chasing butterflies. They eventually move to chasing the ball, hopefully in the right direction, and it is incredible to watch those kids develop. So I am with all of you in supporting more opportunities for kids, Minnesota girls, to have those opportunities. This bill does not do that, and so let me talk about why. And I similarly am going to be focusing on what we're talking about here in the Judiciary Committee here. So oftentimes it feels like this debate is framed as a transgender debate, and I'd really like to appreciate those who have thought about reframing this as a discrimination debate, and that's on all sides of the aisle here. And this is because a discrimination debate is the right way for us to be framing this, especially in the Judiciary Committee. This is also because, of course, trans people exist, so there is no debate there. But discrimination, that is the choice that each of us get to make here today. I believe that each one of us broadly is opposed to adding into law exemptions that would allow for discrimination. Broadly speaking, should the government be in the business of permitting discrimination? I believe that broadly speaking, we do not want to be in the business of that. And I also believe that all of us want to support girls playing sports more. So legally instituting systems that actually result in a chilling effect for girls to play sports is really contrary to this important shared goal. So given all of this, I know we can find a way forward that does not include writing discrimination into Minnesota law and instead sees the humanity in each of us. Right now, girl sports do exist. They are allowed in law, permitted, and that remains the case. So the bill does seek to create an exemption from the state's anti-discrimination law. This will allow for discrimination to be built into law. So creating an exemption, which would result in discriminatory outcomes, should be understood as a decision of tremendous consequence. In fact, you know, the Minnesota Human Rights Act actually has somewhat of a harmful precedent of adding exemptions that permit discrimination against LGBTQ plus communities. For instance, the Minnesota legislature has intentionally removed the discriminatory exemption that allowed for housing providers to discriminate against LGBTQ plus community members from renting a unit in some multifamily housing complexes only a few years ago. This means that it was only a few years ago that some housing providers could have denied me and many Minnesota community members housing. This bill is a bill that will result in discrimination against trans community members. And MDHR opposes adding new exemptions that are designed to, again, allow discrimination against any member of the LGBT community. That's going backwards from where we've gone. Let's leave aside any discriminatory outcomes for trans girls for the moment, too, because I also hear and I believe folks who are saying, look, this has nothing to do with any animus against any group of people. There's no intention of discrimination, but simply and truly wanting to support girls playing sports. So I just really want to say that this also has a negative impact on all Minnesota girls. While there is a lack of clarity and specificity here on implementation, and we would be the agency that would be responsible for checking these exemptions and making sure that enforcement is done correctly, and so we have a lot of questions on implementation. Implementation just ultimately will not and cannot be limited to just trans kids or trans girls. It will impact all Minnesota girls. So again, with a lack of specificity on implementation, there is going to be a variety of processes, it sounds like, that each different entity is going to have that they will individually determine with where girls with some sort of suspect characteristics will be required to prove that they are able to or were able to at some point produce, transport, and utilize eggs for fertilization. It's a lot for a 7-year-old girl to be able to show. And I understand there is not a similar process to require boys to undergo any sort of similar genetic testing to play youth sports. So subjecting boys and girls to different testing requirements results in unequal access for kids to play sports. Unequal access is the opposite of what I believe we are working towards here today. We want more kids to play sports across the board. And today we're particularly worried about girls playing more sports. That is a good goal. This is just not doing it. And what an incredibly chilling effect this has on girls who don't know if, when, or how they may be subject to this scrutiny to play on their youth league. So again, it's having the opposite effect. I'll repeat, implementation here will not and cannot be limited to just trans kids or trans girls. It will impact all Minnesota girls. It will impact all of us here. But I want to take a step back because this is, again, the Judiciary Committee. So here we're looking at what is in the purview of judiciary. What reasons need to exist for the government to allow or approve discrimination to be written into the law? So the Minnesota Human Rights Act says it is the public policy of the state to secure for persons in the state freedom from discrimination. It says the opportunity to obtain employment, housing, and other real estate and full and equal utilization of public accommodations, public services, and equal institutions without such discrimination is hereby recognized as and declared to be a civil right. Bringing legislation that is going to actively exclude a class of people is not something that government should be doing. Preventing harm is a really good thing that government should be working towards. This, however, is not the way to be doing it. Making laws against a group or a category of people, that is just not good for this country, for our state, for the world. It never has been. It should not be what government does. And so while I appreciate the goal broadly, this is not the way to do it. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I look forward to seeing you and all of your kids on the soccer field, where I'll be coaching next fall again.
Thank you, Commissioner Lucero. And you forgot one example, and that's when they're dangling from the goalpost.
Yeah. Exactly.
Feet in the air. At that age, that's a pretty common practice, too. Mm-hmm. We are going to go to Representative Liebling, and then we'll go to the bill's author and presenters for closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your comments, Commissioner Lucero. And Madam Chair, I guess I'd first like to ask, where is this bill going?
I'm sorry, I didn't indicate that, did I? This bill is recommended to pass and be placed on the general register.
Well, so first of all, Madam Chair, I guess I'd like to make a comment to you. This bill really shouldn't go to the general register. It should really go to a bunch of different committees, because if you look at the language of the bill, first of all, it talks about all sorts of entities. So I think it's got, it actually should have a lot of stops. And one of them would be the Commerce Committee, because it talks about different business entities, not-for-profit entities. It should go to education policy, because it talks about educational institutions. In your bill, House File 12, in fact, did go to ed policy, I believe. And this is broader than that bill and includes what was in that bill. And it should go to higher ed, because it talks about post-secondary state colleges and universities. I mean, this bill is talks about any entity. So this bill actually would have, if it was a serious bill, it should have a lot of stops. So I don't think I'm going to make a motion to send it anywhere, because I know the motion would fail. And I will want a roll call on the bill, on passage of the bill. So I'm not going to make...
Roll call has been requested.
Thank you. I'm not going to make those motions, but I just want to make it absolutely clear that, you know, we would be, and I think we would, you know, we'd probably, you know, have a vote on every one of those motion to send it here, there, and everywhere, because it needs to go to a lot of places. So I just, my colleagues have made a lot of really good comments. I just kind of wrapping that up and kind of reflecting on some of the things I heard. You know, Representative Zalesnikar was asked about, I think it was Representative Finke or maybe it was Representative Curran who was asking about, you know, what about intersex people? What about non-binary people? And Representative Zielinski didn't answer the question. These are real people. These are people who don't belong to either sex. They exist. And so when the question is asked, what team do they play on, that's a serious question. That is a serious question. And just to say, oh, well, girl, there's a girls' team, that doesn't answer it. And so, you know, even if you want to set trans people aside, because you don't apparently, or some people don't seem to believe that they really exist, you know, intersex people actually exist. They're actually born intersex, and it can have a lot of different manifestations, but, you know, they exist. So there's that. So I just find this a really troubling bill, and I know that my colleagues have expressed that very well. The idea that this began when we put, you know, we changed the Minnesota Human Rights Act, that's not true. That's not true. This is an issue that was used in the last political campaign by a person running for president. There has been a concerted effort to demonize trans people and people who are gender diverse in different ways, to demonize them for political gain. And that is a horrible, ugly, despicable thing. Demonizing vulnerable people for political gain. That is something that I hope people who are involved in doing that, I hope that history will come to show how truly awful that is. You know, there's been a lot of talk here today about the average this and the average that. Well, the average male has this, the average. You know, when we talk about average, you know, we could say the average black person does it this way, has this characteristic, the average Native American, the average Jew. The average Jew has these characteristics. That's been said throughout history. And when we say the average person, this and that means that every person in that class should somehow be treated differently because we think the average is, there's a word for that. It's prejudice. That is prejudice. So we have, as was pointed out by some of my colleagues here, we've got women who are participating in sports at an extremely high level who could absolutely cream just about any man on the planet in that sport. And, you know, the girls and women, you know, Title IX is a great thing because it was an answer to discrimination against women, believing that they could not do and not giving them the opportunity to show and to do. And I hope that there will come a time when Title IX maybe wouldn't be necessary because women wouldn't maybe need that protection anymore. So another thing I just want to point out here that's been a little bit overlooked is this bill isn't about children only. This bill is about adults, too. This is an extremely broad bill. But the thing I really think that this bill is about prejudice. This is a bill about prejudice. And I think the commissioner expressed it very well. We shouldn't be carving out and creating discrimination and putting it into our Minnesota health records. Or, sorry, I keep saying that, health records. Minnesota Human Rights Act. You can see I came from health. So with that, I'm going to stop, and I'm going to ask everyone to vote no on this extremely bad, hateful bill.
Representative Zuluznikar, Representative Niska, whatever your closing comments might be, or Ms. Carlson, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Scott and members. This has been a robust debate, to say the least. And at the end of the day, this whole reason we're here today is to protect youth sports, to protect women in sports. The very thing that Title IX set to right 50 years ago, to make sure discrimination, as was pointed out by both sides of the aisle, didn't happen for women, that it would not happen. I think it would be fair to say Minnesotans expect, in fact, 80%, you're right, have been polled nationwide, support female sports for females only. That's not coming from me. That's coming from the nation of people who have daughters, who have granddaughters, who have sisters, who have benefited from Title IX that came just 50 years ago. The feminists fought to allow to have the same opportunities that boys' sports had. History clearly shows that, and we got it. And now today, it's in question if it can exist. 100% of the girls want to make sure they're protected. 100% want to know that they have the same protections that they fought for 50 years ago as they're going to have today. This bill is really simple. It's not complicated. It's not taking away humanity and kindness and Minnesota values that we have for each other, and we all would expect to conduct ourselves with the same level of humanity, whether we agree with the issues that either side of the aisle brings to the table for legislation. But yes, I am representing the people in my district and the state that are very concerned that the benefits that they had growing up with Title IX protected for female only will not and is not existing in the same manner today. Their opportunities are limited. Their fairness is at question, and that's all this bill is talking about. It's not talking about how we treat each other, how we deny anyone's existence. That's absolutely ridiculous and ludicrous to even state that that's what this means. This was something the country was 100% for just 50 years ago, and in 50 years we're going to eradicate Title IX for women? That's terrible. Members, House File 1233 is clarifying what Title IX clearly identified for the state of Minnesota and for a country. I urge you to vote yes on the bill.
Thank you, Representative Zuluznikar. Anyone else at the table wishing to have closing comments? Leader Niska.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for the conversation. I'm supporting House File 1233, not just as someone who represents my community, but as a parent of a female athlete. She competed in youth sports and high school sports and now as a college athlete, but as a coach of youth sports teams who's seen the valuable life lessons that sports can teach. But sports can only teach those lessons if kids have a fair opportunity to compete, if athletes have a fair opportunity to compete in a safe way. And that does require sports organizations to make divisions and classes of athletes and teams to have fair competition. We've heard a lot of really sharp rhetoric about who's demonizing who or who's aggressor, who's an aggressor over who. This bill is a response to a lawsuit brought by a powerlifter against a powerlifting organization seeking to ban, to say it's illegal under Minnesota law to have powerlifting divisions based on biological sex. That's why this bill is necessary, because that bill is before, or that case is before the Minnesota Supreme Court. And the Commissioner of Human Rights, the Walz administration, supports the effort to ban, to say biological categories, biological divisions in Minnesota athletics are illegal under Minnesota law. We've heard a lot of rhetoric about anti-discrimination and prejudice, and I agree with a lot of the points. I agree with your points about individual freedom and dignity, Representative Curran. But what I haven't heard an explanation from a testifier, from the Commissioner of Human Rights, from anyone opposed to this bill, is how can women's and girls' sports continue to exist if the concepts that have been argued as being Minnesota law, or what Minnesota law is or what Minnesota law should be, would be Minnesota law. The commissioner said right now girls' sports are legal, but the logic of the Department of Human Rights arguments, the logic of Keith Ellison's advisory opinion, are going to create an untenable situation for any divisions, whether based on gender identity or biological sex. And Representative Hudson is absolutely right. Sex and gender identity are overlapping things. If you're going to have divisions, I think everyone could agree, I think the science is pretty clear that having biological sex divisions is more relevant to athletic competition than gender identity divisions. But if the point is there should be no divisions, if the point is, as Representative Finke said, that women can play with the boys, women can play with the boys. And there are a lot of players in the WNBA that are a lot better at basketball than me. But there are men's but if we had no women WNBA, those women would not be able to compete in the NBA. That's a reality, and that's a reality across a number of sports. And I think that's most clear in sports where you have objective results. Track and field, swimming, the times between elite men and elite women are just different. And biological sex is a real thing that matters for sports categories. And if there are going to be legal women's and girls' sports in Minnesota, House File 1233 is the way to do it. It needs to pass, and I urge your support.
Ms. Carlson, did you have a final wrap-up?
Just quickly, thank you, Chair Scott, and thank you, members. Thank you for having me today. I very much appreciate being here and being part of the committee and being part of this discussion. This bill is quite simple. Just a point to the commission, something the commissioner mentioned. She talked about housing and other points in the Minnesota Human Rights Act, which was surprising to me because the title of this bill is Exemption for Women's Athletics. This is a really a narrow bill that captures the spirit and intent of the law, what the law was always intended to do, what Title IX has always been meant to do, which is protect women and girls' athletic opportunities and other educational opportunities. But today here we're talking about women's athletics. So again, this is just about athletics. This isn't some extensive discriminatory bill. And to that point, everyone can play sports. Our organization and people across Minnesota, I'm excited to see that everyone here today has said they want everyone to play sports. We believe that as well. We believe that there's fair designations and categories for those sports based on the real physiological differences between men and women that doctors
Dr. Simon talked about today, and that even an Olympic physician came in to talk about on your bill, Representative Scott, a few weeks ago. So there are real physiological differences, and that's what this bill addresses. Because we interact with many people across the state, there is one question that girls want answered that they haven't heard most representatives today address, and that is the question of which hardworking female athlete deserves to be displaced by a male on the podium? Which hardworking female athlete deserves to lose her place and spot on a roster? Which hardworking female athlete deserves to lose her place on a scholarship or any other promotional opportunity that she's entitled to under Title IX because she's pushed out and shoved aside by a male? So thank you so much for listening to these concerns. I appreciate the debate and being a part of it.
Thank you. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Scott?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hudson?
Aye.
Representative Bliss?
Aye.
Representative Corinne?
Trans women are women. No.
Representative Duran?
Aye.
Representative Ingen?
Aye.
Representative Feist?
No.
Representative Finke?
No.
Representative Frazier?
No.
Representative Mahmoud?
No.
Representative Moeller?
No.
Representative Rarick?
Yes.
Representative Steer?
Aye.
There being seven ayes and six nays, the motion prevails. The bill is on its way to the General Register. And with that, we are adjourned.